Welcome to Pictures and Dialogues. I'm your host, Tejeshwar Sharma, and I'm off of a high right now from watching Dune Part 2 for the second time. The first time I watched it was last week in IMAX, and I just recently watched it again in Ultra AVX. So before I get into the movie, just some brief observations about the viewing experience between IMAX and Ultra AVX. Now, IMAX is, you know, many are probably familiar with, is probably the largest cinema screen that the public can watch anything on, or that at least anything that's presented in IMAX. And it's a completely different experience. And this specific movie, Dune Part 2, was filmed using IMAX cameras. And I think there's we have to distinguish between movies that are being presented in IMAX versus the ones that are filmed with IMAX cameras and then also presented in an IMAX, using an IMAX projector. So that was just fantastic. It was very loud, but I would highly recommend it. And then I watched it in the Ultra AVX, which seems to be some signature proprietary branding of Cineplex on how they would present certain movies. And it's supposed to stand for Ultra Audiovisual Experience, which is supposed to be, I guess, ultra. However, I did find the viewing experience to be slightly inferior to IMAX, and I guess that's probably expected, but I wouldn't expect it to be so noticeable. So for example, the audio was far lower in the Ultra AVX theater versus I found it to be far more crisp in the IMAX theater. I'm familiar that the Ultra AVX theater was using Atmos speakers, and it's supposed to be equipped with, you know, some of the state-of-the-art sort of audio equipment, but still it didn't feel as crisp as it did in IMAX. I should also probably preface this by saying that I went to view the IMAX of this movie in Landmark Cinemas versus watching the Ultra AVX experience at Cineplex, so two different chains up here in Canada. So more about the experience itself between the two theaters. This is actually something that I had seen on, you know, a blog post online. The theater itself in the Ultra AVX theater, the chairs are just so bloody uncomfortable, meaning that they're actually even very loud when, you know, the guests are adjusting and moving around, and when people are even getting up to use the bathroom. Like, it's very, very noisy, and it's extremely distracting. Versus the IMAX theater at the Landmark Cinema, it's completely different. I believe they're more padded. They do rock slightly, but not to the extent where they're squeaking, which can become, you know, the first chair, second chair, I guess it's fine. You don't really notice it. But then after a while, when you have a full theater, you would significantly notice this noise, and it does become disruptive. And in addition to the audio being inferior to an IMAX theater, it's not really the greatest experience. I found the IMAX is the preferred way to watch this movie. So if you can, watch it in IMAX. I'm not quite sure about how it would be in a regular theater. But I presume it would just be, inferior. And I'm also basing this based off of the price of the ticket. So I think the price of the ticket for an Ultra AVX experience is slightly less than that of the IMAX experience. And then you're also comparing this between two different chains in Canada. So, you know, despite the different experience between the two theaters, nonetheless, the film itself still stands as a great film. This is really the movie that a lot of the Dune fans have been waiting for. And admittedly, I'm not a Dune fan. or at least I was not before 2021. And to be honest, I wasn't even familiar with the Frank Herbert novel as well. And I'm speaking as somewhat of a a moderate sci-fi fan. I was not familiar at all with this novel. But thank you to Denis Villeneuve, the director of both Dune Part 1 and Part 2, who has introduced not only me, but I think many others to the novel and to the story. And what a story. And it was just such a fantastic film. I had very high expectations given some of the early reviews that had, you know, been published, but I was still trying to stay away from them for as long as I could. And I try to do that with any film, especially, you know, such a highly anticipated film, but sometimes it's just so hard not to see them when you're on YouTube or social media. So it was definitely hard to keep away from that. People were defining this as sort of the blockbuster of the year. There was a pre-screening, I guess this was at one of the premieres in the LA area, where Christopher Nolan had done sort of a Q&A with Denis Villeneuve. And I think this was specifically when Tenet was doing a re-release of its 70mm format in IMAX, and then they were presenting 6 minutes of Dune Part 2, specifically the scene where Paul Atreides rides the sandworm. And Christopher Nolan at the time had claimed that this was technically one of the greatest sci-fi films, and was almost, or not almost, but this was actually the Empire Strikes Back of our time. And that's a pretty big claim to be making from such a renowned and respected filmmaker. So there were very high expectations going into this, and it delivered on all fronts. Now you're probably wondering why I watched it twice. Well, I'm just a fan of Denis Villeneuve, so I like to, you know, experience the movies that I'm really looking forward to. I want to experience them once, or, well, definitely once, but, you know, two times or three times, so to enhance the experience. The first time, it's hard. I want to be, analytical about the movie, but I also just want to sort of immerse myself and not think about it too much. So the second time is for that, to be more critical of it and to be more analytical and to seriously just pick up on things that, you know, you miss, because it's a 2-hour and 45-minute movie and it moves at relentless pace. The only other movie that I watched in theaters within the past year was Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer as well. And that too just gets much better with each viewing. And I can say each viewing now because I've actually seen Oppenheimer at home now for the third time, though admittedly not in one sitting, but still definitely has such a great impact on me, that movie. So back to Dune Part 2, it's a fantastic film. For those who are not aware, it's a sci-fi, I would say epic. The person who I went with the second time, one of my friends, he had not actually watched Part 1, so I wouldn't recommend that. I would recommend that you do watch Part 1, and that it'll make the story feel much more familiar. I think it starts, or rather continues, immediately where the first one had left off. And if you're not familiar with the first one, well, here's a quick summary. The House Atreides, who lives on the planet Caladan, is required now to go to Arrakis. And Arrakis is the sort of very special planet, because this is the only planet in, I believe, the universe that can that has a certain spice that can be harvested from the sand. And that spice is extraordinarily valuable in terms of the value it brings, in terms of what can be done with it. And for example, I know that the other houses, the other planets rely on it for interstellar travel as well. So this is essentially like, you know, the gold sitting on the planet. The problem now that you have, where the conflict emerges, is when the locals, the indigenous, the native of Arrakis, have essentially been under control by the Harakan, and they are now being asked to leave. And then it is the House Atreides that is coming to Arrakis to essentially oversee the spice production. So what emerges then is deceit, betrayal, a coup, conflict, and essentially, as you can imagine, the Harakan, who've spent, I think, as they say in the movie and probably even in the book, decades harvesting the spice, building value, and establishing themselves as sort of the rulers of Arrakis, to now have the House Atreides enter and sort of tell them to get out, they wouldn't be so happy about it, you know, normally. So here's a bit of a spoiler alert, but in the first one then, the protagonist, who is Paul Atreides, who is also just sort of mesmerized by this planet Arrakis, his family and his house, who have recently arrived to the planet Arrakis, are essentially overthrown, and his father is killed. So the only few people that survive are Paul Atreides, his mother, and a couple of others, and I won't mention who, because that perhaps gets picked up in Dune Part 2. And so where the first one leaves us is Paul and his mother have been sort of stranded, left. They've escaped the overthrow. They have escaped the violence, but they are now stranded in the desert. And what they encounter is the Fremen. Now, I'm summarizing this fairly quickly describing it at a very high level. But the few things that are relevant, which I will mention, are that Paul has these dreams. He has these dreams where he's sort of, he's not sure if they're speaking to them or if he's supposed to just ignore these or if these are nightmares. He's not sure how to interpret these dreams. So without getting too much to the details, the second part now is where we see sort of the revenge of Paul and his mother. But then they also contemplate whether revenge is, you know, the true path towards, avenging his father, if that's what he also would have wanted. But then there's sort of the debate about whether his father was a vengeful man or not, and also what these dreams that Paul continues to have, what they mean exactly. So there's quite a bit that goes on in part two now, and it's a far more action movie. You're looking for action, this is it. You sort of also see, you definitely see the romance between Paul and one of the natives of Arrakis. Her name is Chani, played by Zendaya, who's actually probably my favorite character in part two, given her sort of principled stance on not following the prophecy kind of blindly and sort of standing by her own principles for very good reasons. So Chani and Paul have this romantic interest. Now, here's a little footnote about the romantic interest. Denis Villeneuve, I don't think, is usually very good at depicting romance on screen, but I think he did a pretty good job here. He also has the support of Hans Zimmer's score, and you really get a feel for the characters now. We're beginning to form relationships, and it's very evident that these relationships will be tested based on some of the decisions that the characters will have to make. So there's quite a bit of interesting dynamics between the leader of the Fremen, or one of the leaders, who's played by Javier Bardem, and between Chani and then Paul, sort of the new arrival on Arrakis and part of the Fremen. So this sort of like this, you know, Dances with the Wolves kind of Avatar feel, where Paul has to integrate himself with the Fremen, and this is where we see quite a bit of development of the characters and about their sort of motives as well. And that's excellent. It's excellently picturized. It's excellently filmed. And it's just been perfectly scored. It feels very cinematic. And that's really nice to see in the blockbuster picture. Of course, you know, later on in the film, you get more of this thread, but it's sort of really established within the first 30 minutes, as it should be. It was quite refreshing to see that in a Denis Villeneuve movie, and I think the only other films of his that I can think of where there's really like this strong romantic story, you know, at the front and center. Blade Runner didn't really have anything. Blade Runner 2049, to clarify, didn't really have anything similar. Arrival had a bit of an emotional story at the core, but not like this. So this is, you know, from what I can recall, something new, and this really sort of sets the tone and stage for you know, some sort of theme across the picture that'll work. I think that'll resonate with many, many people. And it's something else to have, you know, these two hotshot stars, Timothée Chalamet and Zendaya, who are sharing the screen together and have pretty good chemistry together as well. So this is quite something for both of them to be doing on screen. And like I said earlier, I think Zendaya was my favorite part of, or at least her character was my favorite part of the movie. Everything else in the film is pretty much also quite spectacular from sort of the technical, you know, aspects of the opening shots, for example. The lighting, it looks very different, sort of has that golden hour kind of lighting. It's a very intense sequence that opens the film as well. You have quite wide arrangement of actors, top-notch actors, you know, from Dave Bautista. Well, I don't know if he's a top-notch actor, but definitely a popular actor. Josh Brolin, Austin Butler, who I think this is the first time seeing him in a movie, and he's also probably one of my favorite parts of the film, sort of the psychotic and kind of maniac character that he's supposed to be, the Paul Atreides. What would you call the antagonist, I guess, and competitor here for the throne for Arrakis, and he does a great job as well. Just a quick note about the final knife night sequence between the two characters, Paul and Fade Rautha. So between Timothée Chalamet and Austin Butler, it's a very intense sequence. No music at all during the sequence, and it's a very intense knife fight. Very nicely choreographed as well. And it must have been very hard to shoot that and to achieve, because you have all actors present, because all characters are present at the scene as well, and they're all watching them fight. So it's quite intense. The score, like I mentioned, with Hans Zimmer leading the score and composing the score, is just wonderful. My particular favorites are the first one, which opens the film, and then also the music that's played between the scenes when, you know, Paul and Chani are developing interest in one another. And of course, the very iconic high-pitched sort of singing, which is very iconic with the Dune series now as well. So that's definitely also one of my favorite parts of the film. And of course, it's going to resonate with many people. The score, the acting, cinematography, production, everything comes together very, very well. So I was very pleased with the film. And of course, you know, and you can take it as I liked it, since I watched it twice. So I'm looking forward to watching it again when it's you know, released on 4K and DVD. So let me know what you thought, if you liked it. I would definitely recommend it, but be patient with sort of the story of how it unfolds. Even though I mentioned it's definitely there's more sequences of action in the movie this time than compared to part two, The story still takes some time to unfold, and the themes are so much stronger here about prophecy and about dreams and about, you know, what Paul Atreides should be doing, if he should be pursuing what he believes to be true versus listening to his new love interest, Chani. So the tension between, you know, the sort of internal dilemma that he has, I would say, is very memorable to me, and something that really struck my interest and that stayed with me after the movie. So with all that said, definitely recommend it. And again, this was Pictures and Dialogues, I guess a focus on one specific picture. I have seen a couple of others over the past few weeks since the last recording of this episode, but I will definitely endeavor to record separate episodes. Or perhaps the next one will be a blitz, you know, a review blitz, and some other thoughts that I may have on pictures and cinema. So thank you for joining me. This was the second episode of Pictures and Dialogues for 2024. More to come. Again, I'm your host, Tejeshwar Sharma.